I'm Glenn Moberg, heading your way next to special edition of Route 51 as we bring you the Wisconsin Public Radio Wausau Daily Herald Candidates Forum for the 85th and 86th State Assembly Districts, recorded Wednesday, October 3rd at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater. The forum will be heard in its entirety, except for the closing statements, which have been edited because of time constraints. Good evening and welcome to the Wisconsin Public Radio Wausau Daily Herald Forum for the 85th and 86th State Assembly Districts. In the 85th District, Libertarian Jim Moss, Republican Pat Snyder, and Democrat Mandy Wright. And in the 86th District, Democrat Dennis Halkoski and Republican John Spiros. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio with my colleague Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. So the first question, a Dane County judge has struck down essential parts of Act 10. Governor Walker's collective bargaining law, saying the act is unconstitutional in part because it allows state lawmakers in Madison to tell local city councils, county boards, and school boards how they have to bargain with their unions. If you agree that the law should have been struck down, how will these local units of government balance their budgets if they have to negotiate more expensive agreements with their workers? If you disagree with the ruling and you're in favor of the governor's collective bargaining law, how does that fit in with the traditional Republican view of limited government and local control to have politicians in Madison telling city councils, school boards, county boards, and union locals how they have to do their business? And we start with Dennis Halkoski, then John Spiros, then Jim Moss, Pat Snyder, and Mandy Wright. Dennis, you've got 1 minute.
Thank you, Glenn and Rob, and thank you all for being here tonight. My take on the judge's ruling is that if Act 10 had not been passed in the first place, we wouldn't be looking at this. There should have been more work put into that bill. It was rushed through, and the public workers agreed to monetary concessions prior to Act 10 being voted on, and that still wasn't enough. They sought to take their collective bargaining rights away. Had those collective bargaining rights remained in place, we would not have this problem that we have now.
And John Spiros, you have 1 minute.
Thank you both as well. Thank you for having me here. I need to push the button. There we go. When it comes down to Act 10, a few things I'd like to talk about. One thing, I wasn't in the legislature when they passed this. I would have gone through it a little bit differently. I do support it. I do not support the judge's ruling. A few things that I'd like to talk about is that, you know, and on the city council in Marshfield, I'm the chairman of the Finance and Budget Committee. I'm dealing with all the contracts. I've dealt with all the contracts. And really, Act 10 has come out and benefited us from the standpoint it's given us tools to use for a community, and has actually helped us from that standpoint. Where in the past, it really didn't give us any options. It was typically the union would go to arbitration, and bottom line is the arbitrator would make a ruling, and typically it would go against the city. Thank you.
And Jim Moss, you have 1 minute.
Well, I agree with the judge. He's a very smart person. He agrees with my position, which is that the state grabbed too much power when they tried to impose these rules on local governments. The state had a right to change the rules with the state employees, but why they wanted to do it with the municipal and school employees, I don't understand. Well, I do understand that, I guess, but now there's a mess. I think that this may be an opportunity for some reforms. I'm thinking especially the teacher pay schedules, instead of being lockstep, on seniority and academic achievement. I think it has to go, regardless how good a teachers they are, I think we have to go with some kind of a reward and incentive for good teaching, and bring that back down to the local level where the local schools decide who the best teachers are and who isn't.
And Pat Snyder, you've got a minute.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for coming out tonight. Well, if this is unconstitutional, then I suppose the President Obama and Congress is acting unconstitutionally, since there is no collective bargaining in the federal employees. In fact, back in the 70s when it was debated, it was actually voted down by then Congressman Dave Obie. So I think when it comes to collective bargaining, I think what the governor and the legislature did was actually not tell the school boards and local governments what to do, but actually gave them the tools to be able to fiscally get their house in order. And without that, I would think that we'd be looking a lot more like the road to Illinois has, where you have schools thinking about going into the private funds to finish and to help out their public sectors. That's not the road we want to go down. And I would disagree with the judge's ruling.
And Mandy Wright, you have 1 minute.
Thank you again for inviting us, Glenn and Rob. I feel very strongly about this. I think that the 6 days that were allowed for Act 10 to be discussed and passed were a big reason that we have the divisiveness in our state right now. Clearly, it's an extreme piece of legislation, and clearly the people who are affected should have an opportunity to speak about how that is going to affect them. And all of the turmoil that we've seen in this state ever since then, I think, is in large part due to the timeline of just 6 days from when this legislation was proposed until when it was voted upon. I also think that collective bargaining is the right thing to do. I think it gives people the opportunity to come together, discuss their differences before any final decisions are made so that we can create stability for all of our communities. It benefits employees as well as employers, and I think it's absolutely the model that we should be bringing to our community on all levels. Thank you.
And any rebuttal statements? Anybody have anything to add?
I would just like to comment on what John had to say. I've been a part of contract negotiations myself, working on the police department. And we actually had very amicable negotiations every time I was involved. I think that leadership is shown by being able to sit down with your employees and speak with them. And I think that is a big problem within the state right now. Is we're not able to talk to one another anymore. Not only in government, but also neighbors, friends, and even family members can't talk to one another. And I think it shows great leadership for a person to be able to sit down with their employees and work out an amicable agreement.
When you talk about speed, 60 hours of floor debate about the Act 10 reforms. Let's just take a little trip back to 2009 for the budget repair bill. Governor Doyle, a Democratic legislature, pushed through the bill in less than 48 hours. Came to the legislators in the evening of Monday. Next morning, they were voting on it. No committee meetings, no public hearings, and then Governor Doyle signed it February 19th. A $1.2 billion tax increase, the largest in Wisconsin state history. That seems pretty fast to me, without much public debate or even telling the taxpayers of Wisconsin what was coming. So if you want transparency and working together, then I think we need to take an example of that. And we didn't see thousands of people go to Madison, try to recall Governor Doyle, have police and riot gear in the tunnel between the Capitol and Reser Building. We didn't have senators leave the state, and we didn't have assembly people stand up and chant shame in the chambers. So I think that we need to look at all sides before looking at that.
Getting back to the topic at hand, I think it's really important to consider that Act 10 was extremely divisive. This is the bill that we're talking about. And I think it's really important to think about what we need to stay focused on, which is what's best for our community. Act 10 was extremely divisive, like I said, and it is really important that we find ways to work together again without dividing our communities. I think it's really important to do that by giving people time and information about what's being proposed and what the decisions are going to be made ahead of time.
John?
Thanks. A couple things. You know, I was a police officer at one time, and I'm sitting on a city council. I'm in private business, so I see it from different angles. And like I stated earlier, I think as far as the way it was communicated, wasn't communicated properly. One thing that I can tell you, as far as a representative being elected, that you know that I'm going to go out and I'm going to talk to people, that I'm going to sit down and see what they have to say, talk across the aisle, talk to other legislators, and work with Jerry Petrowski and this area so that we can be better, we can get things done, and we can do it unilaterally. And I think that's why Jerry came out and endorsed me, because he knows that I'll do that. He's seen it. He's seen me on the city council and what we've done. And I think if you were to talk to anybody on the council, you know that even though we're nonpartisan, we still get along and we do it pretty well. And I think that you'd see that even in tough discussions, I'm still part of that, to where working on both sides and a little give and take. And I don't think there's anything wrong with communication, talking to people and understanding.
Anyone else?
Well, I think that what we've seen in the results is that we'll have a $274 million tax surplus in July, or a budget surplus, also about $150 million in a rainy day fund. And not only that, but we've seen a lot of the school districts and the taxpayers save over $1 billion. It comes down to how the feasibility is and how we can sustain things.
And moving on to Robert Mentzer, who has the next question.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Glenn. Voters consistently say that they want bipartisanship. And in fact, we've heard this in some of the responses just now. Mandy Wright, you've made it a theme of your campaign. Yet, as a teacher, you had your pay docked when you called in sick in order to go and protest Governor Walker in Madison, and you were a prominent activist in the recall. How credible is it for you to say now that you're interested in harmony? To Pat Snyder, you've made a career out of mocking liberals on the air and holding court against some of the same legislators that you would be asked to work with. Will you be able to do that? To Jim Moss, you're an outsider who has harsh criticism for both parties, so how would you work with them? And for John Spiros and Dennis Halkoski, how would you bring bipartisanship to a political environment that seems consistently to punish it?
And the order of this round is... The order this round is Pat Snyder, Mandy Wright, Jim Moss, John Spiros, and Dennis Halkoski. Pat, you have 1 minute.
Well, the fact of the matter is I've been married to a Democrat for 32 years. So I think that I can pretty much discuss things, or I don't think I would be here today. You know, when I'm on the radio and Tom and I would go after each other pretty good, that was part of the entertainment factor. My core values are there. When it comes to discussion and debate, I think it's fine to be able to bring up points and to discuss them. And yeah, some passion gets involved once in a while, just as long as you don't make it personal. But you need discussion and debate to get the ideas out. And if every legislator in Madison would try to work for ideas instead of working for ways that they can take credit for something, I think we'd get a lot done.
And Mandy Wright, you have 1 minute.
Sure. Well, I've been part of this community my whole life. I'm really committed to this community. And I've been building relationships with people here, not based on if they're Republican or Democrat, but because they're good people and they have good intentions for our community. I want to build on those strengths. I know that we can work together by finding what our common goals are. I think most of the needs that we have here can be met with the resources that we have right here. I do want to address the sick out day, because yes, I did call in sick that day, but I stayed home with my children, my pay was docked, and I just want to make it clear that I was standing for my profession, for my colleagues, and also for the future of education and the students that I serve every day and work with, because I am very concerned about the effects, the cuts to education. We are talking $1.6 billion in cuts to K-12. And that will affect our students, that will affect our children, that will affect our future. I want to make sure that we work together to make a stronger future for everyone.
Jim Moss, you have a minute.
All right, well, I don't know what you're going to call it if I get elected to the legislature, but bipartisan isn't going to work anymore because I'm the third party guy. So you're going to have to come up with something else, Rob.
I'm good with tripartisan.
and I also have a mixed marriage. I'm married to a Democrat, so.
I feel you.
Yeah, I can't convert her. But I think I can work with anybody. I stayed out of the Act 10 and the recall thing. I just thought it was too much and it was inappropriate. And as a libertarian, I believe I'm socially tolerant and I'm also fiscally conservative. So I think I have something in common with just about everybody. So there are some areas of disagreement, but I think we can work it out.
And John Spiros, you have 1 minute.
Earlier I talked about being elected to the city council in 2005. When I first started on the council, it was like, look, what happens here stays here, but you don't take anything home with you. It's not personal. And you know what? That's typically how I operate, is that things are not personable. You know, I don't care whether a person sits on this side of the aisle or that side of the aisle or right in the center of the aisle. I can work with all those individuals. I do it now. 23 years of business, 23 years of transportation as a vice president overseeing safety and claims. Believe me, I've had to deal with a lot of tussles. I'm on the board of directors for the Trucking Industry Defense Association. There's 10 of us on that as well, 13 of us. And believe me, there's some tussles. But we all get along and we get things done. And that's what I'm promising, is that I will get things done, but I'll do it from the standpoint of listening, going out, having open meetings, having town hall meetings, etc. Thank you.
And Dennis, you've got 1 minute.
Well, talking about tussles, John, 32 years in law enforcement, I've had my share of tussles. I enjoyed every minute of my job, no matter who I came in contact with. I had to resolve an issue. Conflict had to be resolved almost immediately. And then you sit down and you talk and you reason. And when you're investigating a crime, you look through facts, search the evidence, make sure you've got all your ducks in a row, and then you go ahead and make an informed decision. That's what I think needs to be done. I think we need to all sit down, be able to sit down, take the vitriol out of the process, sit down, bring our ideas together, and I'm sure we can find parts of everybody's ideas that we can work together on and come to a successful conclusion.
And we'll go into the discussion period here, if anyone has anything they'd like to add.
A couple things. Being a police officer, I was a police officer as well, not 32 years, but I did it. I was in the Air Force, I did that time as well. So I dealt with different situations, but I can tell you that from my standpoint, who you have knocking at your door is the same person that was a police officer. The same individual, I handled things the same way that way as I do in my normal business. When you meet me, this is who I am. There's no phony, that's who you get. That's the way I was as a police officer. I don't go to a door and smile now and say, hey, look at me, I'm somebody different. Bottom line is, when I was a police officer, I did the job. But from a conflict standpoint, I dealt with conflict when I needed to. But for the most part, I communicated, I listened, and I took care of what I needed to take care of. But I did it from the officer standpoint as a peace officer. And I was outside of Dallas, so I really dealt with a number of other things. But you'd see, when I knocked on that window, or I knocked on that door, it was still my job to do, but still trying to deal with it from a conflict resolution standpoint, that it wasn't so much that it was always one way. I got there and we could always talk things out. I didn't have too many situations. If there was any situation where I had to pull out a baton, where I had to spray somebody with mace, we were able to deal with it. Maybe I was fortunate from that standpoint, but that's how we dealt with things.
Anyone else?
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I do just want to say that as a member of this community my entire life, I've received excellent opportunities all along the way. And it's a big part of why I'm running, because I know that this is a fantastic community, and I know that I owe a debt to the people here because I got a great start here. I want everyone to get that great start. I know there will be tough times. I know there will be conflicts, but I think if we reach out with the best of intentions, not presupposing what other people think or say or will do, we can start to build the bridges again that have been severely damaged in the past 2 years. We can start working together again for the better good of everyone.
as Rob's question for me was more the flamethrower, getting a discussion and debate on the air with Tom. There's also times that people don't bring up the people I also brought in that I'm sure didn't quite have the same political ideals that I had. When I had the YWCA in for many fundraisers, when I had Philip Book in with his Wausau West Singers and Variety Show, Terry Riska and the Wausau East Drama Department, I really wanted to promote these folks. It's important. And we left politics out of it. So yeah, you can have discussions and you can be civil. And I'm all about promoting everything for the good of everybody. And I think I did that for 12 years pretty effectively on the radio.
Let's move on to the third question. Is cutting taxes the best way to grow the economy, or is there a role for government in job creation in helping those who have been hit hard by the Great Recession? Or to phrase the question another way, when you make decisions in Madison, are you going to be more concerned about the taxpayers of Wisconsin or more concerned about those who are too poor to pay taxes? Let's start with Dennis Helkoski, then we'll go to John Spiros, Mandy Wright, Jim Moss, and Pat Snyder.
Well, I think it's a combination of all of those things, Glenn. First of all, taxes, they're a part of life, and nobody likes to pay taxes. But depending on who gets the tax cuts is very important to how the economy moves. I believe that the middle class getting tax cuts gives them more money to spend, to buy products, which are then in turn creating jobs for the people that produce those products. That's my take on the tax angle. Also, I see tax breaks being given to people who don't necessarily need those tax breaks, and yet they take part in our society. They use our infrastructure, they use our roads, their employees are educated in our schools, and I believe that everyone should pay a fair share.
John Spiros, you have a minute.
Thank you. I'll echo the beginning of Dennis's comments, and that would be that I'd be concerned about all. I'm concerned about all citizens in Wisconsin, not just this group or that group. Increasing taxes should always be a last resort, no matter what, from my standpoint. I think we need to cut waste. We need to look at abuse and inefficiencies within government. I think we can cut some of those things out, which actually help all the groups. 2005, again, elected to the city council. I ran because of high taxes. Our first year on, we actually were able to reduce the tax code. We've had the tax code down now for 7 years. I think we've reduced it almost by one point. And that's a lot when you talk about, before I got on there, it was up over 10. And we've done pretty well for it to be in the eights. So those are things, you know, I think that one other thing, our income tax code, it's over 100 years old. I think it needs to be reformed. We need to take a look at that. That'll help everybody. Thank you.
Mandy Wright.
Thank you. When it comes to taxes, it's all about choices and priorities. We need to have revenue, and we have programs to support them. I think it's really important that we make the right choices and decide what our priorities are. In this last biennial budget, we spent $2.3 billion on special interests while cutting, making historic cuts to our schools. I also think it's really important, that's not the right choice for us because that was affecting our students, that was affecting our communities. I also think it's really important that we make choices that don't hurt the people who are already suffering. We've lost a lot of jobs in this community. A lot of people can't afford anything extra, and I won't raise taxes on our most vulnerable citizens, seniors, and hard working class families because I know that they can't afford it. I think it's really important that we make the right choices for our communities. We can close those loopholes. We can address that $2.3 billion in special interest money that's completely unaccounted for, and we can keep our communities strong.
And Jim Moss.
Well, I agree that we definitely have to reform our tax system. It's a mess. It's been added to a little here, a little there, add an exclusion, an exception, a tax credit, and so on and so forth until it's very much more complicated than it needs to be. But, and it's as a result of those things and not being indexed to inflation, our taxes have gone up. Wisconsinites paid 11.3% in 2009. Now it's up to 11.9%, and there's some strange results from our tax code. But I cringe when I hear fair share. Nobody can identify fair share, and I think what we need to do is help our economy grow, and we won't need to worry about our tax situation so much.
Pat Snyder.
Well, if you'd listened to me on the radio, you kind of know how I feel about taxes. But the fact of the matter is I've talked to a lot of people at every door I've been to, and all of them have told me when I've asked, do you think you're undertaxed? No one said yes. So I really think that the situation to get revenue into the state is simple. We need to get the jobs here. This is a nationwide competition for the state of Wisconsin. Not only that, it's a global competition. Businesses have to compete. And if we have high taxes on our businesses as well as individuals, then they're not going to have the jobs here. We can't grow jobs. More jobs means more state revenue in our coffers. 14% of the increase, 14% of the taxes and that 2009 increase, filers $100,000 income, they paid 50% of the taxes in Wisconsin. I had a dentist ask me, he says, people tell me to pay my fair share. What is my fair share? Someone needs to define it.
And anyone have anything to add? John?
I'm going to echo the jobs, because I think the jobs and business is a big, big issue. With businesses, jobs, that pretty much takes care of a lot of things. A few other things. You know, right now we're dealing with a property tax freeze, and I support that. Whether you looked or not, we're in the bottom, we're in the top 10 when it comes down to states with the highest taxes. When it comes down to property taxes, that's a big burden on our residents. Right now we have the property tax freeze. I'd like to see it continue. I think some of the things that we've done up in the other area of the 86th is we've consolidated some of our services and done some other things to even control our stuff, our issues at the city level. I think the same thing has to be done throughout. We need to tighten our belts a little bit, all of us. Thank you.
Pat, then Jim.
I'd just like to add that, again, the $2.3 billion special interest money actually is over a 10-year period. Whether or not we have the same governor, the same legislature, we won't know if we ever reach that limit. Also, the 1.6 in educational cuts actually is $800 million. And the tools are there for the school districts to be able to recoup that. And even in a Wisconsin Eye interview, my opponent said that there is really no change in her classroom.
As far as more jobs and fair share, let's take a look at the corporate income tax. What are taxes used for in Wisconsin? Sometimes it's used to discourage things like smoking. So why are we taxing our corporations who provide the jobs for Wisconsin? We can't say we need more jobs and then tax the job makers. I suggest that we reduce and eventually eliminate the corporate income tax, and then the people that are going to be, and then the industries are going to have $1 billion of reinvestment and hiring, and the people that are exchanging money there are going to be the ones who are paying the taxes and supporting the state of Wisconsin.
I agree that we need to bring jobs to this community, but if the previous administration had been successful with all of the money they had given away to create jobs, we would have jobs, and we do not have jobs. We all know that we are seriously hurting in this community. So we need to look at some other things. Also in the previous legislative session, earned income tax credits as well as homestead tax credits were repealed, and that takes money out of the pockets of our seniors and our hardworking middle class families. That takes money out of our entire economy, and that brings us all down. Also in response to what I said about I have not seen changes in my classroom now. That's true. I will tell you the truth. I haven't seen changes in my classroom now. But if you're paying attention, you've read in the papers that the Wausau School District is looking at drastically reshaping the system and maybe needing to close one, possibly two elementary schools in the future. This will affect our children. This will affect our future.
I'd just like to add one thing. Government doesn't create jobs. All we can do is create an environment for jobs to come or grow. That's the involvement of government. And when it comes to priorities, the last legislature put $1 billion into medical assistant programs. That's what we talked about earlier, priorities.
Dennis Halkowski, you wanted to get a word in.
Yes. I just wanted to say that the $2.3 billion was proposed to be for creating jobs, and as Mandy's already stated, that simply didn't happen here. We saw that. And in fact, most of that money went to special interests and corporations. And there were no jobs created. Let's face it, folks. If you own a corporation and you're not putting out enough product, are you really going to hire some more people if you're not selling that product? That's just common business sense. You don't give tax breaks to people that aren't producing. We need an accountability system built into that. If we're going to be giving our tax dollars away, we need to have accountability.
Can I just follow up real quick? Does everybody believe that government can't create jobs? Do cops have jobs? Do firefighters have jobs? Do our fighting men and women overseas have jobs?
Yes, that's true, Glenn, but it's the city taxes that pay for it. People hire them. I mean, when you put that much money into the system, do you really expect the government to do like what, Solyndra? Something like that, maybe?
No, I'm just saying it's a blanket statement. Governments can't create jobs. Are those not real jobs?
Right, but then who subsidizes those jobs? The taxpayers.
Absolutely.
And when government grows a little too large, how do we pay for it?
Jim?
Right. Yeah, you can't have school teachers paying taxes and then the government pays the school teachers in a circle like that. You've got to have some people that are making stuff and selling stuff and exchanging money in order to support the government so you can have these public employment. And it scares me when you're talking about the government creating jobs because somebody mentioned Solyndra. That's a perfect example. Only 27% of the people think that the government should be directly involved with helping companies get ahead because there's favoritism. And you can't support one business that might be competing with another Wisconsin company. It's just not right. That other company CEO is helping support his competition. So that's nothing. We need to encourage economic growth, not create jobs.
We need to move on. Let's go on to Robert Mentzer, who has the next question.
All right, let's move from taxes and jobs to the environment and jobs. Earlier this year, a proposal to change the way the state approves mining operations died in the legislature. That proposal was geared around a proposed iron mine in the Pennoke Range south of Lake Superior. And it was opposed by environmental groups, while advocates of the changes to the law said that the project would have created thousands of good-paying jobs without doing permanent damage to the environment. Some similar proposal is very likely to reemerge in the legislature next year. What specific changes, if any, do you think need to be made to the state's mining laws and regulations? Should Wisconsin's tribal governments be involved? And where would you draw the line? What should not be changed in order to ensure that the natural environment will be protected?
And the order this time around is Jim Moss, Pat Snyder, Mandy Wright, John Spiros, and Dennis Halkowski. Let's start with Jim.
Well, Wisconsin is blessed with some natural resources, and if we're talking about jobs and economic growth, that could certainly help grow Wisconsin. And I think there's absolutely a safe way that we can do that. Now, there are some people who would oppose any kind of mining anywhere, and other people who will support all kinds of mining everywhere. But I think we can work that out, and I think that there are different kinds of mining, different mining procedures. We have a Department of Natural Resources that's expert in this sort of thing, and I think they can take care of it. I do respect the local people and would hate to overrule them if they opposed a mine, because I think that they have the right to do that. So we have to persuade them rather than force them to accept it.
And Pat Snyder, you have a minute.
I think the mining legislation was a terrible waste that happened. The legislation wasn't approving a mine. The legislation was changing the process of how it's done. When a company comes into the state, I think we have come to a time where we can work with the environment as well as business to make sure there is that connection with not harming our environment, but utilizing our resources. Now, what the whole situation was is that a company comes in, makes a proposal to the DNR. The DNR reviews it and then comes back with questions. The company then answers those questions. And then the decision is made whether or not to move forward on that. It takes about a year. Before that, the DNR had unlimited time of constantly coming back wanting more, more, more. If you're an investor spending millions of dollars into something, it's being held up in that. We had to make a change on that legislation. I think our DNR are smart enough people to know if it's going to work or not.
Mandy Wright.
Sure. Well, I come at this from the perspective of a hunter. I'm excited to shoot a deer, hopefully, with my dad this year. Also an outdoor enthusiast and also a community member who understands that we desperately need jobs, especially in the area where the mine was proposed. I welcome anything that can create jobs in Wisconsin. On the other hand, I think it's extremely important that we don't compromise our environmental integrity in the long term for some short-term job gains. We need to be very careful and thoughtful. The decisions that we make will affect generations to come. And the legislation that was proposed was drastic and extreme. I think it's important that we don't have legislation that's written by industry any more than we have legislation that's written by environmental groups. This is once again an example of a missed opportunity where we could have worked together, where we could actually be moving forward on this issue. But one side was very extreme and was not willing to compromise.
And on to John Spiros.
Okay. You know, I think Pat's right. This was a... Thanks, Dennis. You'll just have to keep doing that, all right? Off, on.
Take care of it.
I can't remember that.
I think they're working together.
That's right.
See? That's how I work together. Now, AB 426 and SB 488 were amended bills, is what they were. And the amended bill was an opportunity to create jobs. I think the bill, no matter what, needs to always protect the environment and water. That has to be first, no matter what. And that has to protect us, our citizens, you know, around there. But this was an opportunity, and I think it will be an opportunity in the future, to where we can work together across the aisles, sit down with legislators, our local officials, as well as all the citizens in the area, to see if we can't do something up there, because this wasn't just jobs up in that area, but it was also a trickle down into areas like Wausau in this area to where it could have helped with parts, other things, and could have got things stimulated. So I think we need to take another look at it. I think we need to make sure it's protected. And I think the DNR already came out and said that it does protect the environment. We need to just take another look at it.
Dennis Helkowski.
I say that this is a perfect example of bipartisanship. When this bill was voted on by the state Senate, there was a Republican senator who voted against the bill. And that's how it was defeated. He recognized that the possibility of this mining project damaging our environment was more important to him than any party ideology. And I appreciated that move very much. We have to remember that there are people living up there. And it's a tourist area also. Tourism brings in $16 billion to this state every year. And there are 180,000 people employed in tourism. If we start damaging our environment, what's going to happen to the mom and pop businesses that are a part of tourism in this state? What's going to happen to them? I think John's right in that everybody needs to get together, including the people living in that area, and discuss what should be done sensibly. Let's just slow the process down. It seems like everybody wants to do everything in a hurry here. Whether it's Act 10 or a voter ID bill or this particular situation, we need to slow the process down. There's nothing wrong with that, and get it right.
And Dennis, you've gone over. We're now into the rebuttal period. If anyone has anything else to add, please jump right in.
I'd like to just add one thing. Again, this is about the process of getting this determined, if it's a yes or no for a mine. It still has to be approved by the DNR and the EPA, and they're going to continue to monitor it afterwards. You know, a year's time to determine if a mine can go in there is too fast. I just disagree with that. I think we can give the companies a yes or no answer to be able to go in. And you know, you look at our state flag, it's mining and lumber. We're a manufacturing state. That's starting to come back to our state. We should embrace that. And 5,500 jobs, some would have been private union. I think it was nothing more than just a slap at Governor Walker for not to have a victory before the recall election.
I also think there are examples right here of when we have hastily chosen jobs over our environment. I grew up on the Wisconsin River, and I think we can all remember when nobody could swim in the Wisconsin River, when you couldn't eat fish out of the Wisconsin River because of the extreme pollution there. Now that it's cleaned up, it is a wonderful boon for our community and a center for business, and our waterfront is really very attractive. But we need to be very careful because, after all, the taxpayers are the people who are left with the bill when we need to clean things up. And we, the community members, are the ones who will take the responsibility for that. Our children and our grandchildren will suffer the consequences if we do not take care of our environmental resources today.
Let's move on to the next question. And for the sake of time, we're about three quarters of the way through. I'm just going to have the five of you answer, and we're not going to do a rebuttal for this one. Are you in favor of making abortion illegal or putting additional restrictions on abortion in Wisconsin? Or do you believe that abortion is a right? Is there any possibility of compromise on this issue? Also, are you in favor of or opposed to legalizing gay marriage and repealing Wisconsin's constitutional amendment defining marriages between one man and one woman? Dennis Halkoski, then John Spiros, then Pat Snyder, then Mandy Wright, then Jim Moss. Dennis, you're first.
I believe that a woman has the right to choose, and I believe that all human beings have the right to choose, as long as it's within the law.
And let's move on to John Spiros.
I'm for the sanctity of life, and so I would be against abortions from that standpoint. Is there any room to move? Probably in the most extreme situations, I'd have to take a look at it and understand it. Regarding the rest, since Dennis didn't answer, I'm not going to.
Let's move on to Pat Snyder.
Abortion, it's legal everywhere in the country. I am a pro-life. I do believe that life starts in the womb. Woman has to make a very tough decision. You can't legislate this type of thing. You have to actually go to the heart of the women and men that are facing this and hope that they change their hearts. I know this personally. My brother and his wife, they've adopted 5 children, all through mothers who've decided to have their children and wanted to give them up for adoption, and even a nephew of mine who is a product of a rape. So there are people out there that do look beyond the hurt or beyond the tragedy and make that decision. So right now it's legal. I would not put taxpayer dollars into subsidizing it, though. And I would also support our constitutional amendment, one man, one woman, in marriage.
Mandy Wright.
Thank you. Again, I think this is a peripheral issue. It's important to many people, of course. What I really think is that nobody wants an abortion. Nobody goes into this situation deciding that that is what they intended from the beginning. This is a lack of education. This is a lack of access to healthcare and resources. So we really need to be focusing on making sure that people do have the education so they understand what happens when they create a child. They understand the responsibilities that they're taking on. They understand the implications for our entire community. Obviously, this is a very complex and personal decision, and I think it should be left up to a woman and her family and her religious community in consultation with her physician so that we can have healthy families. I also think it's critical that we take care of the children here. I can tell you as a public school teacher, we have many children with serious needs, and we are not meeting all the needs of the children that we have already. We need to focus on the kids that we have here and make sure that we have excellent education and prevention services available for everyone.
Jim Moss.
Well, the Libertarian Party would like to keep the government out of those kinds of decisions completely. For one thing, it's an emotional position. The people who think that life begins at conception cannot be persuaded by people who believe that life begins at birth to change their positions. It just doesn't make sense to either one. And it's we don't want, the Libertarian Party doesn't want to force either one to change their ideas. We remind them that personal freedom and personal responsibility go together, and we need other options, and we need education so these things don't happen. As far as gay marriage, Libertarians don't think that there is anything like gay marriage. There's marriage or there isn't marriage. And we support separating marriage and state. I don't know how the state got into the marriage business, but I think it's a little, just follow the money.
And very quickly, Dennis Halkoski, you didn't answer that part of the question. Would you be in favor of legalizing gay marriage in Wisconsin?
Yes. Yes, I would.
John Spiros?
I think that marriage is between a man and a woman.
And Mandy Wright.
I will actually have to agree with Jim Moss here that marriage is marriage, and government doesn't have a right to decide who should marry who.
Let's move on to the next question. Robert Mentzer.
The discussion around education in Wisconsin has tended to revolve around the cuts to funding in the last budget, but separately from that, Wisconsin also has embarked on a whole series of education reforms that are going to reshape the way students are tested here, the way teachers are evaluated, and put new emphasis throughout the school system in the state. Some of these reforms were tied to federal Race to the Top funding. Others came out of a task force that included members of the Walker administration, as well as State Superintendent Tony Evers, a Read to Lead as an example of that. We are in a time of big changes in the state's education system. What is your view of Wisconsin's recent education reforms, and what is still needed to improve Wisconsin schools?
And we'll start with Mandy Wright.
Thank you. I can tell you from my experience working with sixth graders today even, that there are many, many good initiatives in education happening right now. We have new curriculum, which is streamlining the process and making sure that we are all working together to help our children reach their fullest potential. We will have in my school district, we will be piloting accountability standards for teachers as well as for administration, because we feel it's very important to be on the forefront of that. I think everyone's aware that Wausau School District has taken the lead in promoting technology. And of course, it's obvious that we are interested in diversifying our options because we have many different charter schools available, from the Montessori School to the EAA Academy to the IDEA program at DC Everest. So there are lots of excellent initiatives. On the other hand, we are making decisions about education that will affect us in the long term. And once again, when we've cut $2.6 billion to our public schools, we are making decisions that are not putting our children first. We also have recently, in the past legislative session, decided to spend $300 million on unaccountable voucher schools that only exist in Milwaukee and Racine. And those schools don't even need to give their teachers background checks. I'm extremely concerned about the future of education and making sure that we put our priorities in the right place.
Jim Moss.
Well, as far as education reform, libertarians believe that it shouldn't be up to the government to decide what to do about education. Ultimately, the parents should be in control. And we're getting more and more choices to pick from. Government schools are one. Then there's charter schools, virtual schools, private schools, and it's in the best interest of our society as a whole that our young people are educated so that they can participate in society and get good jobs and so on. But how they do that, I think, should be up to the parents.
Pat Snyder.
Education is starting to change a bit. 70% of the jobs that are open here in the state of Wisconsin require a high school degree or a two-year technical degree. I think that what we need to start focusing on, something that was done in the last legislation by a Democrat and a Republican working together, was trying to get a technical high school diploma program involved in the schools, but it fell. It didn't get through the Senate. I think that we have to start getting the business people, the community leaders, more involved in our high schools and middle schools. Entrepreneurship, teaching these young kids what it takes to be successful in business and things of that nature, I think, are a great educational experience. And I think that we will continue to pay a lot of attention to the K through 12. I think we're on the right path and we'll make the right decisions with civil discussion.
John Spiros.
I'd like to echo a little bit of what Pat said. You know, we rank about 42nd when it comes down to a ready workforce. One thing I know when I was asked at the Wausau Herald before the primary is what would I talk about from an education standpoint? And I think Pat's right on that education, business have to work together. Business has to come in and figure out what do we need to do, and we need to educate on those so that we have that ready workforce going. But the other thing is, with the school system and the education task force, one thing I liked, this was bipartisan. And they put that back into the school system, and they worked on this together. I think that was just shows you that both sides can come together on things like this. And I do believe we need to put money back into education. Education is important. There's children out here today that are sitting there. These kids, this is our future. This is where we need to put our money, and we need to invest in them and work hard on that.
And Dennis Helkowski.
Well, it may surprise you, but I agree with John and Tom. I talked to Dr. Wires at the North Central Technical College not too long ago, and as you know, technical colleges have suffered a 30% loss in aid. What she told me was that partnering with businesses has allowed them to develop a training center in Merrill, which has just been completed, for public safety workers. And she said that is how she was able to get through part of the 30% cuts to her budget. I still think that the cuts to education were too deep and just far too wide, because it's going to affect K through 12, our technical schools, our colleges, the research at the University of Wisconsin, in a number of different areas.
And we are out of time. And that concludes tonight's Wisconsin Public Radio Wausau Daily Herald Forum for the candidates for the 85th and 86th Assembly District. Thanks to our candidates Jim Moss, Pat Snyder, Mandy Wright, Dennis Helkoski, and John Spiros, my colleague Robert Menser. Thanks also to the staff at UW-Marathon County, Dean Keith Montgomery, Theater Director Chris Berg, Rick Ryer and Jane Ritger of Wisconsin Public Radio, and Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. I'm Glenn Mobert. You've been a great audience. Don't forget to vote Tuesday, November 6th. Good night, everybody. Heading your way next Thursday, October 11th on Route 51, 7th District Republican Congressman Sean Duffy, who faces Democrat Pat Kreitlow in the November 6th election. Sean Duffy, taking your phone calls next Thursday at 5 on Route 51 on the Ideas Network.